How do the arts help us understand the world? How do our personal lives influence the art we make?
The Creative Process Podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
In terms of what I'm writing about, in terms of general subjects, I'm always trying to make myself a more interesting human being. And so that means I'm reading a lot about what human beings have gone through, often in historical terms. And I'm coming across these human dilemmas where I'm like, oh my God, what would it have been like to be in that position? For me, that's a little signal that in fact, the narrative that I've come across or the factoid I've come across has snagged my emotional imagination. And I do think that literature is all about extending the empathetic imagination. And so I'm always looking in some ways to educate myself in emotional terms too. And so I'm very interested in those historical situations that put people in what seem to be impossible positions, because I'm very interested in the way we respond in those situations where it feels like we both have responsibility and we don't have responsibility.
I think we're in an age where there is a lot of self-reflection about who am I and what are my strong opinions, and let me define everything about myself in this very strong, loud way. But for me, I'm equally interested in other people and the ability to live many lives through the arts, both in terms of watching other stories and getting to step into other people's shoes and experience and be in rooms that you would never be in otherwise, but also as a writer to be able to inhabit the heart and the headspace of someone that's very different than me. It just feels like the greatest gift. I feel like I'm getting to live more than my one singular life. And what could be more incredible than that, to have an expansive human experience? So for me, the arts have always been foundational to every day of my life. I grew up in a household where the arts were fundamental in that it's just something that was part of every day. My dad was a businessman, manager at a company, and my mom did hospital administration. They were not artists, but they loved the arts. And so every weekend we went to the theater or to the symphony, and we were very middle class. We would sit in the way, way, way up cheap seats at the symphony, but we were there. And my parents had favorite artists that they love, and we didn't have original work, but we had prints or posters of the artists that they love. So it was always part of who I was, and it was always about being curious. And my parents really instilled in me an interest in the other person and listening as hard as you're talking, and ideally listening more than you're talking. And I think that's what the arts does for us. It allows us to listen to the inner lives of others, and that is a gift.
If you want to do art well, you need to have some pleasure. Like when talking, if talking is not a pleasure, it's horrible.
I would say, as a cinematographer, if you don't do that, you're going to fail terribly. If you can't make what you do personal to you, I mean, there is no soul. You need to make it personal.
I feel like, oh, you're the handheld cameraman. It's like a saxophone player. It's like talking. So certainly, this is why I like it. The base of walking, I decide to go closer to the actor or to take more distance. It's so free. It's my brain reacting. No one is telling me to do that. No one is telling me, oh, but one step forward, one step backward. It's me. I have to decide on the spot. So there is certainly the freedom of a painter with a brush when you are walking with your camera handheld.
I knew Phil for several years. We went on vacation together. He produced a play of mine. Before we did Doubt, we worked in the same theater company together. And he was very committed to excellence. So he could become impatient with anybody who was not committed to excellence. And that could make him a volatile person to deal with, but Phil cared. He cared a great deal, and he worked really hard. You know, they're very committed. Viola, she'd done a decent amount of big work before that, but she was not recognized yet, and she was careful. She certainly wasn't throwing her weight around. She was, I'm the new kid on the block, and I'm just here to work and be serious and do my job, keep my head down and get out. And pretty much that's what I was doing too, you know, because I got Meryl, I got Phil Hoffman, who I was friends with, but Phil's not an easy guy to be friends with. And then Amy was somebody who tried to get along with everybody. And Phil would say, like, you just want everybody to like you. So you're in the middle of that group, and you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're trying to prove something. They're very, very smart people, and they're going to figure out whatever it is that you're doing. They're going to figure out whether you're in any way trying to handle, and that's not going to go well. And so I didn't do that. Meryl is very, very smart and very focused and, in a sense, very private to work. She isn't going to talk a great deal about the secrets of her character. She's going to carry them with her. I'm New York to the soles of my feet, and more specifically, the Bronx. I was formed in the Bronx. And you grow up wherever you grow up. And there are things there, and there are other things that are not there. And the things that are not there, you can imagine. And I did a lot of imagining in the Bronx because there was a lot of things that I gravitated towards that just weren't there. The fantastic, magic, beautiful places, the exoticism of that. And then at another later point, I thought, I am missing my whole life from my work. I am writing about all these things that are not my life because I think everything that I actually saw and heard and felt is so ordinary that it's not worth repeating. And I think most of us feel that way. And we're dead wrong. That in fact, those things are gold. Those are the things that we actually have to write about. And you can write about anything when you start with those things and embrace them. Embrace your own life.
I think that the important thing for people to know about storytelling is that books are sort of like the oil paintings of new media. It's a very fine art form, an old art form, and a story exists in everything, whether it's a photograph, a painting, a song, a movie. It all began with a story. We look at books in terms of all of the manifestations that a book can take. It could be a film or a TV show. It's pretty neat being able to help books and stories into the world like that. I feel like stories help to make people and in turn the world a better place.
Maybe there needs to be other moments of civil disobedience where democracy is sort of activated in a way. So I think that the visual arts, they have a role to play in terms of activating democracy, of drawing upon history and asking questions of what culture can do. The Eureka Stockade was a point in history where there were some gold miners and they revolted against the government because the government was enforcing licensing fees that were outrageously expensive at the time. So I don't reproduce figurative paintings, but I wanted to take that energy of what dissent is about, and I wanted to reclaim the energy of the gestural mark as a signifier of dissent. I came across the Roman guy called Raffaello Carboni, and he wrote a book on the Eureka Stockade. He was a politically active guy. He was a supporter of Mazzini and Garibaldi, who founded modern Italy. And then 3 years after, Carboni fought in the movement that unified Italy. 3 years afterwards, he actually went to Australia, to Victoria, and he was also involved in that Eureka Stockade moment. So I thought, oh, that's an interesting connection between my roots in Australia, and it's an interesting connection between the roots in Europe.
I've also worked with other living writers. I've adapted 2 short story collections, one by Stork Dybeck, one by Elizabeth Crane. And that was a great joy to get to work with living writers who were not involved in the adaptation, but were around, who had come to rehearsal and were beautifully open to what I was doing with my interpretation of their work. So yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think the benefit of picking something that is considered a masterwork is that you're building on unbelievable material. So there's a great advantage there. But there's also the challenge of, this isn't always the case, but often when you're doing adaptation, you're trying to match the voice. And you always have to write something new. There's always a moment where you have to write a new scene or new lines, transition. There's always some invention involved. So then there's a moment where you're like, okay, I have to come up with writing that matches seamlessly the brilliance of Edith Wharton or Charles Dickens or Mark Twain, all of whom I've adapted. And that can also be a beautiful, humbling challenge. But I also will say, I also have learned so much. Like, I've learned so much about writing character from Charles Dickens because I've been so deeply in his work and see how he constructs characters, see how he uses language. I learned so much about writing comedy. I don't really write comedies, but injecting comedy into my work through adapting Twain, you know, his social commentary and how that works in his work. So I also feel like adaptation has been the most incredible education for me as a writer, is to be able to not just read the work of these writers, but get so inside of the text in the adaptation process that you really are breaking things down to the sentence structure, the word choice. You're really deconstructing it. It's like you're taking the clock apart to see how it all works. And I benefited so much from that experience.
Storytelling is probably one of our oldest art forms, and it has helped us in so many ways understand who we are as people, what our emotions are, and it makes us understand our history and how we are trying to evolve from that. And we can't silence the arts. We can't silence those voices, because if we do, we lose something that is so crucial to who we are just as human beings. We want to tell stories. We want to express in not just hard news ways, but in other ways for people to connect to who may not have necessary connection to just a straight news story. I think the best example for me were my parents, for sure. I think there are certain things that they instilled in me from a young age that I carry with me as a writer and as a grown man. I think there's a sense of humility, a sense of patience, and a sense of humor. I think those three things are so important. I think in all our situations and looking at everyone and having the patience to listen to who they are and what they are and what their circumstances are, and then to not take yourself too seriously, that you have to give yourself a chance to breathe, that helped inform the person that I feel I am today, and hopefully that I am now instilling on my own son. It helped me want to explore these ideas on a sort of a bigger scale and in a way that felt right for me.
We hope you've enjoyed this program. To hear more from these guests, listen to their full interviews. The interviews were conducted by Mia Funk with the participation of collaborating universities and students. This episode was produced by Mia Funk and Tom Logan, and the associate interviews producer on this episode was Jamie Lammers. If you'd like to get involved with our creative community exhibitions or our podcasts, or submit your creative works for review, just drop us a line at team@creativeprocess.info. Thank you for listening.